When I was a kid growing up in Jersey, anybody who was a hoot or really funny or something, we'd call them a riot. Ladies and gents, this guy's a riot in more ways than one. Bob Dylan.
Dylan, the show that celebrates the work of Bob Dylan, one song at a time, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, the freewheeling Rob Kelly, and our pal Jared Scott London is back. Hello, Jared.
How are you, Rob? It's very nice to be back. Thank you for having me again.
Thank you. This is really cool. We're going to be talking about Po' Boy, a song from Bob's 2001 album, Love and Theft. I'd say one of the jewels of his later career, Love and Theft.
Sure.
This song is unusual. I mean, I have to admit, Jared, I'll say up front, I really don't know what this song's about.
It seems
so simple. It has this beautiful guitar part as how it opens, and it feels like the word ditty would be sort of ascribed to it. Like, it's kind of simple. But it is, I find it really inscrutable. It's beautiful, and I love it, but it's inscrutable. So you know, what is it to you? What is Po' Boy to you?
Po' Boy is a sandwich to me.
Right, other than the sandwich.
Yeah. I love that he called it that. He could have called it Poor Boy. And from what I've read, actually, Poor Boy Blues was an old folk song that was kind of passed around over many years, rewritten many times. So it's sort of in a similar vein in which this song was written. And to your point, you know, I kind of read a bit about this song and seeing what people all over the internet had thought.
Yeah, I did too.
And people did kind of reference it as a ditty, or somebody even referred to it as a jingle. And it is a gorgeous guitar part. On Wikipedia, Tim Riley, who's I think he reviews pop songs and classical songs for NPR, he said, scored for guitar with lounge chord jazz patterns. Those are much better words than I could have found myself. And he said, sounds as if it could have been recorded in 1920, leaves you hanging on the end of each bridge, which is very true, and lets the band punctuate the trail of words he's squeezed into the lines, which gives it a reluctant, soft shoe charm, which is so eloquently stated.
Yeah, I agree with all of that.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And then even further, just to really speak to the music of it, there's a quote by Bob Dylan himself, which I've listened to this interview before. It's on YouTube. It's the Rome interview. It's recorded on July 23rd, 2011. And somebody asked him about this song. Have you heard that interview, by the way?
I don't think I have.
Check that one out. It's very revealing. And I feel like you'd never hear Bob talk at length about his own work.
No.
In recent day. Although the interview that came out a few weeks ago before Triplicate, I thought was very...
Oh, the one with Bill Flanagan, yeah.
Yes. I thought that was wild. But so Bob himself says that song sort of plays itself, because that's a song that could exist without any lyric. It exists on just chord structures, and the lyrics are just trying to stay in the path and not to lay too much emotional rhetoric here and there.
Hmm.
Which I agree. I first, you know, remember, I'm a musician, and I have my guitar here just to sort of highlight the guitar part, which I love. But I remember first hearing this song and just thinking, that's a beautiful guitar part. Those are great chords. They're absolutely jazzy, and they're interesting. It almost reminded me of something that could potentially be on Nashville Skyline in a way. I mean, it almost had like this fun kind of structure that I see a lot on Nashville Skyline. And it's not a kind of guitar part that you'd often see from Bob, but he does such a nice job. And I wonder if he really wrote it. You know, I read somewhere that it was scored for guitar. I'm under the impression that he did write it himself. Maybe he had some help from some of the great guitarists that he's played with over the years.
This is the kind of thing I imagine. Like, I would think that in another life, Bob would be one of those guys sitting off to the side, like in some French cafe, just playing music with a guitar case open, and people leave money. And,
yeah,
you know, like, and for all I know, he does do that. I mean, we have no idea. I mean, the man seems to pack a lot of lifetimes into his years. But like, this is the kind of song I imagine that you'd hear from a Bob Dylan who's playing in a French cafe with a hood on and nobody knows who he is.
right.
He's just sort of busking there. This is the kind of song I picture.
Yeah, for sure. And like Tim Riley says, it's lounge chord jazz patterns. So it goes like a little like this, which everybody knows, but.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the intro, and then the verse, which is sort of similar. So those are beautiful chords there.
Can I just say, for someone who has absolutely no musical ability at all, I find it amazing that, like, you can reproduce what I heard on the record. I mean, I know it's all the same chords. I understand that. But just the idea that you can do that is amazing. I'm like, that's the song. There it is. He's playing it.
And you must understand, when I started teaching myself how to play guitar, that was the most exciting thing, too, that when I played it, it sounded just like it did on the record.
Oh, that's so cool.
it's awesome. And that is, like, truly – it's a guitar part that I was instantly drawn to. And a quick funny anecdote. A few years ago, over the summer, I was in Fire Island, which is the New York area – you know, near Long Island. I brought my guitar out. I was with a bunch of friends, and there was, you know, some girls, and I was playing guitar, and we were singing songs, and there was this one really pretty girl, and for some reason, I couldn't connect with her. I knew that she wasn't totally impressed, and I'm trying my best, right? She was the prettiest girl there. And eventually, later on in the afternoon, I start playing Po' Boy, and for whatever reason, she, like, instantly lit up and was impressed and even remarked something like, wow, I was really impressed by that one. And she finally saw that, I don't know, I was a good musician or something.
Wow.
So it's something that even transcends to the prettiest girl on the back porch.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, it was incredible. I think she ended up with some other guy that night. But still, she was impressed for the moment.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, this song, coming as it does on Love and Theft, it's sandwiched in between Honest With Me and Cry a While, both of which are very hard driving songs, and they're kind of I don't want to say they're hard to listen to, but they're kind of crunchy and they're driving and they're very kind of pounding, and then right. So this is kind of like a nice glass of cool water in between that, to hear this sort of, you know, like you just played, this sort of, you know, low-key, lackadaisical almost sort of beat. And then so the opening verses to this, it's all, you know, kind of a bunch of lyrics that have a lot of humor to them, without necessarily, you know, I don't know, near the end when he does literally some knock-knock jokes and stuff, then it becomes much more humorous. But like in the beginning, it opens with, man comes to the door and I say, for whom are you looking? He says, your wife. I say, she's busy in the kitchen cooking. Poor boy, where you been? I already told you, won't tell you again. And so I'm like, okay, well, what does that mean? And those people were like, you know, we're reading stuff online. Like, okay, well, that's somebody coming to Po' Boy's house looking for Po' Boy's wife. And Po' Boy is kind of too dumb to even figure that out.
This guy's
clearly there to meet with Po' Boy's wife for no good purposes. But Po' Boy doesn't know that. He says, oh, she's in the kitchen. Like, he doesn't figure out, maybe you shouldn't invite this guy into the house. And then it continues with, I say, how much you want for that? I go into the store. The man says, $3. All right. I say, will you take $4?
He's a horrible negotiator.
Poor boy, never say die. Things will be all right by and by. And so it's like it's the singer, in this case Dylan, standing back and commenting on Po' Boy.
Right.
I guess this sort of hapless loser who's going through life, maybe not even a loser, that's probably a little too harsh, but like a guy that's going through life who's constantly put upon.
He's a little naive and potentially pathetic, but it seems as though he almost likes the attention.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody wrote online, I don't know if this was, you know, a critic, but he's a pathetic figure that it's almost funny. At every turn, he is rejected, abused, and taken advantage of, and yet seems grateful for the attention.
Right, yeah, exactly. I mean, and then later on in the song, he quotes, there's a section where he says, where we're talking about sort of another Po' Boy, where he says, Othello told Desdemona, I'm cold, right. Cover me with a blanket. By the way, what happened to that poison wine? She said, I gave it to you, you drank it. Poor boy laying him straight, picking up the cherries falling off the plate. And so it's, you know, it's another version of, you know, Othello's been poisoned by Desdemona and Iago, but he doesn't seem to know it in that moment. And so it's Bob again having sympathy for the regular guy, the regular Joe, the guy that's working hard. He's working on the train line. Dylan's boundless empathy for those types of figures.
Yeah, he definitely has sympathy for him. It's almost as if each verse, the first two lines are sort of the story, and then the second two are verse Bob commenting on him and saying, you know, don't worry about it. Things will be all right by and by. I always liked that Othello Desdemona line for some reason. I found that one to be the funniest, I think, from my perspective. And then reading online, I don't remember Othello too well, but what I read was that Othello actually kills Desdemona and not by poison. He suffocates her with a pillow. But in Hamlet, Gertrude mistakenly drinks the poison wine, which was meant for Hamlet. So there's some sort of connection there. There's some sort of thought there. It's sort of twisted and turned around. And maybe you've read as well, there seems to be a lot of lines, I don't know about pulled, but a lot of references in a way, and some lines even pulled. I mean, there's a bunch. I mean, we could start with
The one part, he says, "Time and love has branded me with its claws," which is a great, you know, line about aging,
right.
Of course. Had to go to Florida,
exactly.
dodging them Georgia laws, and that's apparently right from a Blind Willie McTell song,
right.
Which is "Got to dodge your ma, dodge your pa, go to Florida and dodge the Georgia law," which
then you kill kid, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, some of the interpretations I've read is that's somebody running from Jim Crow because
right.
of the Georgia laws that were going on, at, you know, in the time of when you sort of picture when the song is sort of happening.
Yeah, for sure. And that line, that Blind Willie McTell song apparently had a few different versions of the lyrics. And the last version to which had that phrasing was in 1956, which seems right about that time frame. The line about, which is also funny, call down to room service says send up a room.
Right out of a Marx Brothers movie.
Exactly. We have the line about one of the bridges. My father was, where we go, let me just pull it up. My mother was the daughter of a wealthy farmer. My father was a traveling salesman. I never met him. When my mother died, my uncle took me in to run a funeral parlor. He did a lot of nice things for me, and I won't forget them. Which is the English translation of a Japanese, I think, novel or poem by Junichi Saga's Confessions of a Yakuza. And the line or the translation from that is, my mother was the daughter of a wealthy farmer. She died when I was 11. My father was a traveling salesman. I never met him. Spot on. My uncle was a nice man. I never forget him. And my mother died. I decided it'd be best to go try my luck there. So he's clearly pulling from a lot of things here.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. And it sort of brings up that discussion of Dylan, which people have written about and argued and discussed about, you know, is he copywriting, is he plagiarizing? And in one of the Rolling Stone interviews, I don't remember which one exactly that it was, but he says, you know, who's listening to who's reading Rambo? Who's reading these authors that I'm pulling from? You know, nobody would be listening to these people if it wasn't for me. And you're damn right. I'm not reading any books by Junichi Saga. Right. So,
Yeah.
So, like, I love that he does that. And the same way that where people have been bashing Triplicate and all these Sinatra songs and these songwriters from Tin Pan Alley, I feel so lucky to be introduced to them because I probably wouldn't have gone out and explored them. But I love Dylan so much, and he knows that he has this rabid fan base, and people like me are going to listen to these records. And now I know these incredible, well-crafted songs and melodies from the 40s and 50s. So I see it. Dylan's like a great teacher in a way, and he's introducing us to these great lines from Groucho Marx and Willie McTell and some Japanese author that I certainly wouldn't have looked into or known about.
Yeah, I mean, he's been doing this his whole career. It's just now that we have the internet, and it's a lot easier to do. I mean, that's all. I mean, of course, he's recontextualizing. Yes, he's literally taking the words from this poem. Yeah, but it's all within the context of the song. It's not that these particular words are somehow, you know, transcendently brilliant. It's just
right.
within the context of, oh, okay, he did a lot of nice things for me, and I won't forget him. And even that line is unusual to me in some Dylan songs because it's so gentle, and you don't hear a lot of that in a sort of Dylan songs about just saying something really nice about somebody. He did a nice thing for me, and I won't forget him. You know, it's just kind of a nice, sweet sort of sound to it, and the way that, again, it plays perfectly well with the chords of, you know, just this kind of like easygoing, relaxing, like, okay, you know, yeah, this poor guy is put upon, and he's not the, you know, he's a little dim, but it's okay. Like things will be okay by and by. You know, it's kind of a nice thing.
I agree. It's almost like Bob is being almost just like a nice paternal figure here. He's, you know, kind of giving this po' boy advice along the way and, you know, kind of supporting him in a way. I guess that's what it is. I mean, it's an interesting way to structure a song. Again, it's funny. Like we're sitting here examining these lyrics, recording this podcast on something that Dylan said to the public. You know, the lyrics are just trying to stay in the path and not lay too much emotional rhetoric here or there. And frankly, that's sort of all of Dylan's music, right? I mean, Dylan didn't want anything to be looked into too much. He was saying, don't read into it. These were things that came into my head. I don't know where they came from. You know, I mean, I know, like, I've written songs, and sometimes you write things that just sound nice, or, you know, they come to you, and it's like, wow, that's a good rhyme. That sounds interesting. And, you know, often I think he's trying to say something, but sometimes he's just putting pen to paper, and he's realizing that it sounds great, and he's always been upset by these people that are searching for a deeper meaning, which is fun to do, and we're allowed to play that game. But, you know, how deep can you really read into something? I mean, most artists even say that. Mm-hmm. You know, I wrote it. It came to me. I don't know. I wasn't trying to say anything so profound or prophetic. I mean, Dylan's really the greatest example of that. I mean, it's been forever that he's been saying this. He's always been combative with people who are trying to find deeper meaning.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of an interview I saw many, many years ago with Paul Simon, and he was talking about the song he wrote, "The Obvious Child." And there's a line in "The Obvious Child" where it says, "The cross is in the ballpark." And he admitted later on that when he wrote that line, he did not have any meaning for it. It just sounded it just sounded nice to him. And then later on, after he recorded the song, then he came up with a meaning in his head, like, oh, okay, that's what it means to me. But at the moment of writing it, and the moment of putting it in the song, it didn't have any intrinsic meaning. And that really kind of blew my mind that you could do that. I was like, you can write songs like that? I didn't know that. And once you figure that out, it makes it a lot easier to take some of this Dylan stuff where you're like, what is he talking about? It's like, well, it's not always meant to be intellectual. Sometimes it's meant to be emotional, or just the feeling of it. And there's a definite feeling from Po' Boy that you get that is separated from the intellectual pursuit of, you know, digging through every little granular piece, especially when we get down to the last verse where he's literally doing a knock joke.
Yeah, which is
knocking on the door. I say, who is it and where are you from? Man says, Freddie. I said, Freddie who? He says, Freddie or not, here I come. I mean, you're like, good Lord, this is Bob Dylan telling me these kinds of jokes. And what reminds me, what this reminds me of is I saw him in December of 1995 in Philadelphia.
Okay.
And he was obviously had a wild hair that night, because interspersed with all the songs, he was telling knock knock jokes.
Right.
Hoary dad jokes.
Yep.
Complete with rim shots from the drummer. And I mean, like, he said, I have an ex-wife. She's so obsessed. Her name is Mimi. And I was like, bada boom. And I'm like,
right.
I'm standing there. I was with my friend Dan, and we stared at each other like, what are we watching? What's happening? Incredible. The poet laureate of the 20th century is telling us knock knock jokes. It's like, so Dylan has that playful side to him. And, you know, it's kind of fun to see it come out in these songs, especially when, and as you mentioned, the way he jams some of the words together to get these lines in.
Right.
It doesn't always fit, but he talks really fast. He's got to get it all in. And it just has a real playful, kind of silly feel to it. And it's among all the heavy stuff that goes on Love and Theft. And, of course, Love and Theft has additional baggage because of its release, because it came out on 9/11. And everyone, you know, even though, of course, it was recorded before then, you can't hear it. You can't hear anything but post that. But to hear this kind of light, soft shoe, again, ditty is sort of very relaxing. And it's kind of fun to hear him just kind of goof around a little. And the band is so simpatico with him.
Oh,
and
totally.
They're just totally into it. And it's a real delight. It's a minor song, but it's a real, like, hidden gem on this record.
100%. And this is the line referring to this song from the Rolling Stone review of the record. It says, and it's literally exactly what you're saying. He says, in Po' Boy, he pushes the borscht belt humor to heroically absurd extremes, jumping over a light acoustic jingle to bite Groucho Marx. It's borscht belt humor. And you're right. Those jokes, there's been a page or two online that I've seen of a compilation of all these jokes that Dylan did during the 90s, I guess, or whenever it was. They are so corny. They're so silly. They're total dad jokes. I like them, but it's just, it's almost like Dylan kind of wanted to sort of play to that time. Maybe he wanted to be a borscht belt comedian like Woody Allen or one of these guys. And telling these, I mean, listen, he's a Jew. I mean, you know, he was born in Minnesota, but I guess he really grew up in New York. I'm sure he liked these guys.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe that was a thing. And, you know, I listened to an episode of Theme Time Radio Hour recently, which it might be interesting to do an episode on that or something,
so
or a discussion
good.
Of it.
That is like the most little, like, underrated part of his career is Theme Time Radio Hour. So
it's
good.
It's so well done and polished, and it's like drips with nostalgia, right? It brings you back to a certain time, and I think that's what he was doing with those jokes, with the jokes in these songs, with the way that the music is phrased and the way the chords are put together. I mean, this guy Tim Riley, again, he said it could have been recorded in 1920. I guess it could be that early, but it's like could have been recorded in 1920. He's got jokes from the 1950s. The song spans generations, but regardless, all from the past, which I love.
Yeah, I mean, Dylan must have, you know, we all know that he's a big movie fan, and he probably grew up on, I think his uncle owned a movie theater, I think, if I remember correctly. And so he probably saw a ton of movies. And so you think about when he was a kid, he was, you know, 10 in 1951, the Marx Brothers were over by then, but they were still around and their movies were still playing, and Abbott and Costello and all. I mean, he grew up in that era. So you can see why he would love all that kind of, you know, malapropism kind of humor.
How about in this recent interview when the guy asked him, what have you been watching lately? And he says, I watch reruns of I Love Lucy.
I Love Lucy, yeah.
Oh, my God. this guy's a riot.
I'm trying to picture the band like, Bob, can we watch Netflix or something? Yeah. No, this is the one where Lucy has to eat all the meatballs. Like, Bob, okay.
If he even lets the band hang out with him. You know, I didn't tell this story last time. When I saw Bob in Madison, Wisconsin, I forget what year. I think I said it. I think I got it wrong last time when I mentioned the show. It must have been for 2013. Maybe it was a 2011 or 2012. I actually went backstage. What? I knew somebody that was a tour manager, or I had a good friend who knew the tour manager. And we had seats that were in like the third or fourth row.
Wow.
And I got to sit there for the first show and the late show, which was awesome. And then we went backstage hoping to see Bob or whatever. Of course we didn't, but we did see Tony, the bass player, Tony.
Oh, so cool, Garnier.
So I go to him and I was like, you know, I'm just full of excitement. I don't really know what to say. I'm like, so what is it like to work with him? And he goes, oh, like Charlie's a great drummer or something like that, you know, played it off. And we shook hands with him, and that was all that we saw. And Bob, I think he just runs right out after the show.
Wow.
But oh, so we did go back.
Wow.
It was exciting. I mean, obviously, we didn't get to meet Bob, and I don't think anybody does. And of course, Tony, you know, played it off in sort of a funny, cryptic way, because everybody has to defend Bob's identity and his mystique.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. I'm sure Tony Garnier has been asked that so many times, but that, again, that's another guy who, like, needs to be, like, where's his autobiography? I mean, this
I'm sure at some point, right?
This is a guy that's given up his whole life, basically, for Dylan. He's been playing with Dylan for 30 years now.
Is that how long it is? I was going to ask.
Yeah. He started playing with him in, like, 87 or 88, and it's been constant. So this is a guy that's basically just given up his professional career. Not given up. That sounds a little harsh. But, like, you know, he's devoted his life to touring the world with Bob Dylan. Like, I loved it. And he always seems like he's having such a good time.
Totally.
Yeah, wow. That's amazing. That's really cool. I love
yeah.
That. Wow.
It's funny. I remember after the last podcast, I was like, I can't believe I forgot to tell that story. But it happened. And it is amazing because there are guys that come in and out of the band, and he is somebody that has stuck around for a while. You know, there was that drummer. I'm blanking on his name, but he did a documentary sort of
I think Winston Watson.
Yeah. He was with him for however many years, and I guess he – I don't want to say sold out. And I wonder how Dylan feels about the fact that he did that sort of documentary or whatnot. But I'm sure that as the years go on, we're going to learn a lot more about this guy. I mean, especially with what's happening in Tulsa. I mean, if Dylan willingly donated everything to that university, he's clearly pulling back the curtain a bit, which is exciting. Yeah.
I would love to read a book by Garnier, not for dirt. I don't want dirt about Bob. I don't care about that.
Right.
But I would just be like, what is it like? Be around this guy all the time. What's it like playing cards with Bob Dylan? You know, what's it like going and getting a beer or playing pool with Bob? What the hell is that like? That's got to be just, you know, because the people that the band get to meet, you know, is like just unbelievable. I mean, you've heard all sorts of stories about people that come within Bob's, we're kind of off po' boy now, but
all good.
People that come within Bob's orbit And it's like, I remember reading a piece that Sheryl Crow talked about many years ago where she, when she was doing opening slots for him back when she was just coming up, and I actually saw one of those shows, and she goes, you know, Bob invites her backstage, maybe, you know, for whatever reason, you want to be nefarious, maybe not. I mean, you know, Sheryl's gorgeous, so maybe that was part of the reason he invited her. But he invited her backstage, and he's in, like, they're in a dressing room or something, and there's a knock on the door, and the door opens, and it's Ringo Starr. And Sheryl Crow is just like, you know, like, okay. And then later, they invite her out to dinner. They're like, well, we're going to go get something to eat after the show. Do you want to come? And she's like, yeah, sure, okay. And then they're like, oh, by the way, Neil's coming. And it's Neil Young. And it's like, sat at dinner with Ringo Starr, Neil Young, and Bob Dylan. Like,
I mean, yeah. I mean, think about the Traveling Wilburys. What kind of party that must have been, hanging out at Bob's recording studio.
Oh, my God. It's just unbelievable. And so it said, sometimes so when I hear songs like Po' Boy, I do think that Bob, you know, would kind of enjoy that life of just hanging out with his you know, famous pals and just plicking out music and, you know, not making any money from it, because what the hell, you know, I mean, he's got enough money from, he's made a bunch of money just in the time you and I recorded this from song royalties.
But that's true. But then how come he just licensed All I Really Want to Do to a chicken commercial?
I know. then he does the Cadillac commercial. I don't think the man is inscrutable. The man,
you know,
is
what? Completely. He's got a big family at this point that I think he wants to leave something to.
I'm sure there's a decent inheritance working out for
I'm sure.
Everybody.
There's a lot of kids, aren't there?
There's a lot of kids, a lot of grandkids. I think there's even a great-grandkid at this point. I could be
wrong.
Is
there?
Yeah, I think so. I think I read that once, that he's a great-grandfather at this point.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
To get back to Po' Boy a bit, right? I mean, this has been great. And I mean, there's so many things we could say about this guy. But there was one interpretation that I found. And I'll try to read this. This guy kind of writes pretty weird. And maybe he's listening. His name is Jesse Jacob Anderson. He posted this on like a Google group or something. And this is a wildly different interpretation than you and I had. Then even Dylan remarks saying that it shouldn't be, you know, emotional rhetoric. So Jesse Jacob Anderson says, it's all about death. Mm. The song starts, death knocks on the door looking for the narrator's wife. With her gone, he has to do the shopping, but doesn't even know the value of money and offers the storekeeper more instead of less. Death seeps into every verse, falling between the cars, never say die, lying on the street. With his wife gone, his wife loses meaning, playing the game on another level, meaning he's still working for his wife. She's up on another level, in parentheses, heaven. He moves to the city, into the city's red-hot town, but still no success. Heads to Florida to find a prostitute. I don't know where he comes up with this, but ends up making a mess of the place. Finally, off the line verse, death knocks on the door. With his wife dead, he no longer asks for whom are you looking, but instead demands to know who it is. Freddy or not, here I come, and it's time to go. Last scene, he's there taking over the rest of the household duties. The rest of the household duties right before he goes, to be taken with a grain of salt. P.S. I love how time equals love in its clause, because I think the word it's is singular. So Bob's actually saying time and love there is a singular thing, which is actually a beautiful line that I didn't think about. So this guy's taking a very interesting interpretation of the song, which could have merit to it. I mean, you know, I think our, you know, analysis, again, I don't think any analysis of a Dylan song can mean too much. People allowed to interpret these songs however they like.
I like that, though. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I had to pull that one up. I actually pulled it up as we were talking because I thought it was worth sharing to give another perspective.
Yeah, that's I like that a lot. As you're going over the lines, like, yeah, he does talk. I mean, you know, most Dylan songs talk about death. He does talk about the funeral parlor, the palace of gloom, the you know, the working like the devil. That's all very interesting. Wow. Oh, boy. Now I got to rethink this. All right, I got to re-listen to this.
I know. But you know what? I think overall this is – I love it. Borscht Belt humor.
Yeah. Bob himself has only played it in concert 41 times. It has not been played since 2010. So he's basically, for the most part, given up on it. But, you know, you never know. He's touring right now.
Yeah,
of course
right.
He is. So, I mean, he'll pull it out, I'm sure, someday. I've never actually heard any live versions of it, so it'd be interesting to see.
There is one on YouTube.
Oh, is there
that
really?
I found.
Oh, wow.
There is.
Cool.
I'll send it to you. And it's actually, it's an acoustic version with, I assume, Dylan and one of his guitar players playing with him. Two acoustic guitars.
Really?
And it sounds really nice.
Very cool. All right. Yeah. It's a great little song. A really great little song. I mean, everything on.
And it gets all the ladies. Really
cool. Yeah, it's terrific. So I think that is going to do it for Po' Boy. Jared, thank you so much for coming back on, man. I love talking to you, and I love the musician angle that you bring to it. Like I said, I am completely unqualified for that, and so. And just the fact that I heard you play it is so thrilling to me. That's awesome. That's what it sounds like.
We'll have to get together. You don't live too far, man.
So, very cool. Is there any place on the internet people can find you if they want to hear more from you?
You know what? I released some songs many years ago, and I have some covers, including a Dylan track or two on SoundCloud. If you go to SoundCloud/Jared Scott London, I haven't put anything on there in a while. I don't know if I could truly stand behind it, but there's some, I guess, decent stuff on there you can check out.
All right, very cool. All right, everybody, stay tuned. We're going to run some podcast promos, and when we come back, I am going to have a few words about Bob's new album, Triplicate. So stay tuned.
Movies, TV, comics, music. Pop Culture Affidavit has it all. It's everything random in the world of popular culture, and it's all covered by me, Tom Paneris. New episodes drop monthly at twotruefreaks.com, and be sure to check out blog posts about random pop culture topics at popcultureaffidavit.com. Pop Culture Affidavit, the sworn testimony of a dork.
And I'm Sean. We're here to tell you about our podcast, Worst Collection Ever.
And this is the show where we tell you about the worst comic book collection in existence. And it just happens to belong to us.
We have some of the worst comics from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. They're bad. They're not worth anything.
No good.
Why do we own them? Bad. I own a number of issues of Terror Inc. and Guy Gardner.
Basically, we go around to local comic book stores and we buy everything we can out of dollar boxes.
We tell you about the weird stuff in them. We tell you about stuff that's related to them. We go into tangents and we're very uninformed. So,
oh my God, totally. But totally check out our podcast because you'll hear us just talk and joke about Marvel books and DC books from God only knows when.
That's right. It's our show, Worst Collection Ever, every Tuesday on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcasts. Download, rate, subscribe, tell a friend.
It'll be good and terrible, but good.
Hey, we're back. And as promised, I have a couple of thoughts about Bob's new album, Triplicate, which came out on March 31st. We can't let a new Dylan album pass by without some comment. It's a big deal. Even though there's like 40 of them, still a really big deal. We talked about, and as everybody knows by now, Triplicate is yet another, three albums of this sort of classic songbook material that Bob has been mining for the last couple of years. He started it with Shadows in the Night and then Fallen Angels, and now we're here with Triplicate. Fortunately, I wish I had some, you know, real grand insight to this set of records, but I don't. I'm kind of similar. I had a pretty similar reaction that I did to the previous two, which was these things are okay. They have some moments of real beauty and real grace, and I can sort of hear what Bob's getting at, but they're overall just not connecting with me a whole lot. And I think, you know, this might be one of those instances where, you know, when I first started getting into Bob back in the 90s, which seems long ago to me, but in terms of the man's career, it's a pretty late period. There was lots of stuff that I didn't get into, you know, like the Christian period and like some of the really early folky stuff. Like, that didn't appeal to me. I latched on more to, of course, like Highway 61 and Blood on the Tracks and things like that. And that was the stuff I concentrated on. But as I've gotten older, I've come to appreciate some of the other material. And now there really is no period of the man's career that I can't find something positive to say about. Yes, even the mid-80s electronica dance beat stuff. So I think with these records, I'm probably going to have a similar reaction, and that maybe later on they'll grow on me. Some of these songs I'm just so familiar with, even though I'm not of that generation, but stuff like Stormy Weather or As Time Goes By or When the World Was Young, I'm just sort of kind of too familiar with these songs from hearing them in movies over the years, Woody Allen and stuff, all these movies over the years. And so there's just not a whole lot to me that Bob's bringing to them necessarily. that is making them sound new to me. So, you know, like I said, I listened to the record. I listened to it a couple of times. I liked it. There was some stuff, I don't mean to be so negative, there was some stuff that I really did like. I tended to like the up-tempo stuff a lot more. I think that's just generally my speed. Like CD2, which is Devil Dolls, opens up with Braggin', which I thought was great. I really loved Braggin'. And there was The Best Is Yet to Come, which again was kind of up-tempo. I really liked the up-tempo stuff, and I wish Bob had found a way to put a couple more of them in there. But unfortunately, like, there's long stretches of like 5 or 6, 7 songs in a row where they're just these sort of slow ballads. And to me, they sound kind of samey. And it just, like I said, it just didn't resonate with me. But I don't believe that Bob is doing anything as a trifle. I believe he really is trying to communicate something with these records. For someone who's a dogged Dylan trivia aficionado like I am, I've read a lot of books by Clinton Halen, and there's one called Bob Dylan Day by Day, which literally tracks every day of the man's sort of professional life from birth all the way till 1995, which is when the book was written. And if you go back and you read that book, you know, he'll mention a lot about stuff that Bob rehearsed on tour rehearsals or warm-ups that he did for other records, and you'll see that his whole career is dotted with covers of this kind of material. Back in the 80s, he was doing a lot of covers of like Bing Crosby songs and Dinah Shore songs and Ink Spot songs. And so this is stuff that's always been in the back of his mind. He grew up on this stuff. So none of this is particularly new. I just think that Bob's at a different point in his career. I mean, he's such a living legend that I'm sure Sony or Columbia Records, whatever you want to call it, will put out whatever he wants to put out. So maybe back in the 80s, he might have wanted to do a record like this, but he just didn't have the sort of commercial clout to do it. But now he does. And so he's feeling like he can do it, and he is doing it. And more power to him. Because, I mean, after all, the man is 75 years old. He's put out 3 records, 5 if you want to count this one as 3 separate records, 3/5 records in the space of 3 years. I mean, he's put out 2 new records just since I've started doing this podcast, which is an amazing output for a man of his age. That's not even including the 100 or so concerts that he does every year. So the man never stops giving. So I take these records sort of in the spirit they're intended. They're not something that I think are going to follow me necessarily the way like Tempest did. I mean, I've basically never stopped listening to Tempest ever since I got it back in 2012. I still dig out songs from it and put it in playlists and things. And so I just don't see a lot of that going on here. But, you know, again, with a lot of Dylan records, the stuff will grow with me over time. I have read a couple of other reviews where people are wondering, like, is all this stuff a prank? Is Dylan pulling a prank? And, you know, to me, that stuff's asinine. I mean, just the whole notion that Dylan, who was one of the most towering figures of the last half of the 20th century and, you know, again, one of the last living legends of the new millennium, that he, you know, is pulling a prank, that he cares so much about pranking his audience that he would go to this effort. That seems to be more about the ego of the person saying it than it does about Bob Dylan. I really don't think Bob has any time in his life to pull pranks on people. I think if you go back and listen to his Christmas record, Christmas in the Heart, I would say that that record is as serious as a heart attack. And so the idea that this is all a lark, I think is completely ridiculous. I think you can hear it in every one of these songs. Bob really cares about this material. And while it does seem like an odd fit, he's giving it his all. And we should all be sort of thankful for that. Another thing I wanted to mention about these songs is that, of course, I saw him last year in concert with my pal Dan Eaker, and Dan and I have been going to Dylan concerts for 20 years now, and I will say, Dylan really put across these songs in concert, I would say better than he did, than he's doing on the albums. He really brought an intensity to them, and I wasn't paying that much attention to what was going on at the time, but I had this sort of notion of, when he did the first couple of covers, that's when people headed to go get their beer, get popcorn or whatever, you know, food you get, or buy a t-shirt. But then as the songs rolled on, he ended up doing like 6 or 7 that night. Less and less people got up during those covers. And there was one, I forget the last one that he sang, people really like gave him a standing O for. So people can sense the passion that Dylan is bringing to him. And in some ways, these are working better in concert than I think they are on the record. So, you know, he's real serious about this, and he's really making them work on in a live capacity. And they've still yet to put out a live album of Bob Dylan with his band, this band that's been in various permutations for 30 years. There is still no official live album of the Neverending Tour, which is just unbelievable. I don't know what Sony, Columbia, whatever is waiting for, but I would love to hear some of this material done as a live album. I think it might be even more revelatory for some people that are skeptical of these in-studio recordings. Speaking of the band, this album, Triplicate, comes with some liner notes, which I think are kind of interesting because they sort of are like talking about how great the record is, which is kind of a fun idea. That's sort of new. But in the liner notes, they actually mention Tony Garnier and talking about how great he is and what an important part he is to the band. And I love that. I love that Tony Garnier is getting mentioned, as I mentioned in this very episode in the Po' Boy segment. Garnier is really like in still as yet unheralded linchpin to Dylan's career in the last three decades or so, and so it was great to see him mentioned on the record, aside from just the normal credits of being in the band. One of the other things I liked about Triplicate is that it continues the tradition of really weirdo Bob in real life photos, which I love when they include these. The CD version has Bob standing in front of this old car with what looks like kind of like an Amy Winehouse beauty queen type woman, and he's wearing his like straw boater hat or whatever he's got. So I love the idea of those photos. I wish somebody would publish a book of like the Dylan album photo sessions, because those are just a riot. So I love that he includes those. Those are really, really interesting. And I guess like the last thing that I did want to mention is when Dylan was on his run of albums that went from Love and Theft through Modern Times, Together Through Life, and Tempest, people were wondering if this was Dylan in quote-unquote final stasis. Like, you know, he kind of stopped innovating at that point, because every time we would hear a new Dylan record, it was a completely new sound. Oh, Mercy sounded very different than Under the Red Sky, which ended up sounding very different from Time Out of Mind, yada, yada, yada. But the last four records produced by Bob himself, or Jack Frost, if you please, they all kind of had a similar sonic sound. And people were wondering, is this it? Is, you know, once Dylan had hit 65, was he sort of done innovating his sound? Well, now we know that that is not the case, because these three records couldn't be more different from those records. So this is clearly not a man in a final creative stasis. And that leads me to think that, you know, it harkens back to, I think I talked about this during the release of Fallen Angels, that when Bob put out his folk, acoustic folk records, Good As I Been to You in 1992 and World Gone Wrong in 1993, we look back on them now as those were sort of the clearing the decks for what was to come, which was Time Out of Mind and, again, Love and Theft in Modern Times. So maybe that's what these are. Maybe he's got to scratch that itch, and then he'll move on to something else. It certainly would seem that if you're looking to put a period at the end of the sentence of this iteration of your career, doing a triple album would be the way to do it. I mean, I can't picture that there's another single album to follow after this. In fact, I read an interview just today with one of, I think, the sound engineers that worked on these records, and he mentioned that they recorded, quote-unquote, something around 50 songs. Well, we've heard about 50 songs at this point, so I don't know if there is anything else. So this might be it for this period of the man's career. And, you know, again, if that is it, if he doesn't want to do anymore, he doesn't owe us anything. He doesn't owe me anything. We owe him. He constantly gives and gives and gives as a creative person. And like I said, I just like to try and be as open as I can and as honest as I can in receiving what he wants to share with me. So I think that's really going to do it for Triplicate. Again, it's something that I'm going to have to grow on me, but a lot of Dylan material does. The stuff that I liked, I really do like. And so, you know, it's great that Bob is feeling good and feeling creative, and that makes me very happy. And I hope that, you know, if he has more albums in him, that's great. So that's Triplicate. Before I sign off, it has been a very long time since I've done any feedback. I'm very lazy about doing listener feedback. The show doesn't get a whole lot of on the way of comments, and I think that can become kind of like a negative feedback loop, in that I don't do feedback on the show, so therefore people tend to not leave comments, and because they don't leave comments, I don't do feedback. So I want to kind of stop that here. So I'm going to go all the way back to May of 2016, which was the last time I did feedback, and I'm just going to read some iTunes reviews. There are a lot of comments that I've tried to respond to over on the website, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. I'm going to try and be more attentive to those, but I do want to read the feedback that left me on the iTunes reviews, because the iTunes reviews are so important. As far as I know, Pod Dylan is still the only Bob Dylan podcast. So anybody looking for a Bob Dylan podcast, they're going to find mine. So these iTunes reviews are vitally important. So I'm going to go all the way back for a year and read the comments left on iTunes starting in May 14, 2016, which is, again, the last time I did listener feedback. So let's start with a comment from Queen0505. Love the pod and the format. It would be really interesting sometime if you were able to do a song off a live album, done, for when we switched over from acoustic to electric. I'll have to get to that. Might just be an interesting frame for the discussion. Maybe a little Maggie's Farm. Thanks for the pod. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Queen. DS and RS, that's our pals the Sutherlands. Passion Project Define. Rob Kelly and a rotating group of co-hosts celebrate the music of Bob Dylan one song at a time. The depth of love, passion, and respect for the material is undeniable, and listeners will both be both entertained and educated. Listen and enjoy. Thank you, Darren and Ruth. Always love to hear from you guys. Bob Dylpacastination by Piper Ruth. I had a classmate that liked Bob Dylan. He would probably love this podcast. I will recommend it to him if our paths cross again, because Rob does a great job talking about what his music means to him, a song at a time, with a guest that feels a connection to that song. Before this podcast, I related more to Weird Al's Bob Dylan parody, but I'm learning to have an appreciation for Bob Dylan himself. However you get there, Piper Ruth. We have another comment from A semicolon LSKDFJA. You try to pronounce that. Finally, a Dylan podcast. This is great. For listeners, check out expectingrain.com, which is the best Dylan's website and forum there is. Yes, I would agree that expectingrain.com is like the source for Dylan fandom, and the webmaster there has been nice enough to post the links whenever I do a new episode, and that has gotten a lot of listeners over to the show, so thank you very much for that. Thank you for the review. My pal Earth2 Chris from the network says, Tangled Up in Bob. Rob Kelly's passion for Bob Dylan is infectious. I know, because I'm not what you would call a huge Dylan fan, but I enjoy your episode of this series. Rob and his guests bring their unique personal experiences of each song discussed, proving the impact that Dylan had had on the world in the past 50-plus years. For insightful commentary on some of the greatest songs ever written, look no further than Pod Dylan. Thank you, pal. Idaho 254. Love it. Please never stop. This is the podcast I had been dreaming of, Rob. Thank you so much for doing this. Love it since the beginning, but episode 7 really hit home for me. To hear two people geeking out about Where Are You Tonight, Journey Through Dark Heat, with such love for a song that I adore too. Very exciting for me. That episode made me remember that for a period in the 90s, I listened to Street Legal every day driving to work, singing at the top of my lungs as one does only alone in a car. Love that album. I was blown away that you happened to mention Brownsville Girl in that same episode, a song that I love, all 11 minutes of it. I'm a 52-year-old Dylan fan, and I have been a fan since I was 18 or 19. And like you, Rob, my Dylan song count far outnumbers all the songs in my collection. Love your insights and information, and your guests are fantastic, too. Dylan is such an acquired taste that it's hard to find hardcore fans to geek out with, so this podcast is a dream come true. I do have one request. Don't stop. Never stop. Keep doing this podcast till the wheels fall off and burn, till the sun fills the paint and the seat covers fade and the water moccasin dies, and thank you. Thank you, Idaho. I love that review. And we'll have to get to Brownsville Girls sometime. That's a terrific song. Me and my guests tend to make fun of Bob's mid-80s output, but Brownsville Girls is a great song. Great podcast from EmilBX33. Learned so much about Dylan in an easy, relatable way. Going one song at a time is fantastic. Highly recommended. Thank you. And the final review is from RobertFrost22. Next best thing to Theme Time Radio Hour. I give this podcast a higher rating because it allows me to rediscover Dylan classics as well as sublime, less well-known songs. It looks at one song at a time and has a conversation with one guest about that song. This format makes for a comfortable, friendly listening, kind of like listening to a conversation with friends. Well, thank you very much, Robert Frost. Comparing it to Theme Time Radio Hour is way more praise than I deserve. But thank you, everybody, for the reviews. I really appreciate it, and I strive to do better in the feedback department. So that's going to do it for this particular episode. I have to thank Jared Scott London for coming back. I always enjoy talking to him. I love that he brought his guitar and he was able to reproduce Po' Boy for me live. That was awesome. So we'll be back with another episode pretty soon. So again, thanks everybody for listening and we'll see you later. Bye.
Man came to the door. I said, for whom are you looking? Says your wife. I see she's busy in the kitchen cooking. Poor boy, where you been? I already told you, won't tell you again. I say, how much you want for that? I go into the store. Man says $3, alright. I say, well, you take four. Poor boy, never say die. Things will be alright by and by.